Welcome to Theatre Voice. Suman Butcher. I'm talking to Indu Rubasingham, Artistic Director of the Tricycle Theatre Kilburn. Welcome to Theatre Voice, Indu.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
Great. It's been lovely to be able to talk to you now. I mean, you've had a year running this place.
Nearly, not quite.
Well,
yeah,
yes,
nearly,
you're coming up to a year.
I'm coming up to a year in May,
As I was coming up to talk to you, I received an email that told me that Red Velvet, your inaugural show, has been nominated for an Olivier.
Yeah, it has. So
congratulations on behalf of Theatre Voice.
Thank you very much.
Well, it's been a hectic year, I think, you know.
That's an understatement, but yes,
it has. I mean, the Tricycle has always been a political theatre, very well known in the Kilburn High Road, but since you've taken over the reins, it's now become the must-go-to theatre to be able to hope to get tickets to see a show, to just hang out in the bar and maybe even put things on. I mean, what's it been like from your perspective?
It's been tough. It's been really because Nick Kent, my predecessor, did an amazing job and he's been here 28 years. And how do you start or begin to even take that on? Because it's not only a huge legacy, but also it's a long time in a particular way. So it's also part of my remit and part of what I was been trying to do is also how to bring in different audiences that may have normally come to the Tricycle, or how to open up in a different way, and also how to redefine political theatre from my point of view, which is different. So and also an organisation that's been used to being run in a certain way, and actually changing the culture. So yeah.
Well, I've just congratulated you for Red Velvet, but of course your second show that you directed, Paper Dolls, has been extended until the end of April.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been playing to massive popular houses.
Yeah.
Can you tell me how did you find that show? You know, what prompted
absolutely.
You to put it on?
Two of my main things about the Tricycle and my vision has been about different lenses to the world and the unheard voice being part of the mainstream, which Red Velvet very much was, the story of Ira Aldridge, Arabian Nights, One Monkey, Don't Stop, No Show. And then for me, Paper Dolls really epitomises my vision in one play, in the sense that it's about five Filipino immigrants in Tel Aviv, Israel, who care for elderly Orthodox Jewish men and in their spare time form a cross-dressing group called the Paper Dolls. And as crazy as it sounds, it's a true story. And so you're hearing the unheard voice of the migrant worker who has no rights, who has very little rights in a country. And even though this is set in Israel, this could be many countries. I mean, it's just in the news at the moment. I read yesterday about Singapore not giving status to immigrant care workers, or, you know. But it's also fun because there's music and it's cross-dressing. But you sort of got in this play, in this little sort of world, you've got different sexualities, different religions, different cultures, different ages, and there's this huge collision. And yet, despite these opposite worlds and the most extreme worlds, you know, the cross-dressing Filipino caretaker to the Orthodox Hasidic Jewish man, you still have relationships and connections and human connections forming. And I guess, in a way, that's my optimism of the world, that we that humanity overcomes all the barriers of differences. And I found this play before I started the job at the Tricycle. I was a freelance director, and I worked at Sundance and Sundance Theatre Lab, and I've been working very closely with Philip Himberg, who's the artistic director of Sundance, and our world vision and world views are very similar. And he was telling me about this story, and he sent me the script that he'd been working on, because it's based on a documentary. And I just felt, to me, that the nub of the story just filled my heart. Do you know what I mean? It was like, oh my God, this is the type of message I want to communicate to the world through art.
Yeah, as I said, that the show's been extended now. It's been doing very well, and I don't want to give away the ending.
No, don't give away the ending.
Yeah,
Well,
it's been written about in the reviews.
Actually, I mean, it's not in the play. But it's not in the play. And we purposely didn't put it in the play.
One of the characters,
the central character in the play and in the documentary as well, was actually who's a real person, is actually not with us because she was murdered in Dubai for cross-dressing, and in quite a brutal and also forgotten way, you know. It was and what's really lovely about this story and doing this is actually this person who, you know, they had to really raise money to even get the body back to, you know, the Philippines, and you know, it took ages for information to get across because no one knew who this person, this murdered person, was, and it was unidentified for a while. Do you know, the anonymous nature of her death, and actually, it does feel really important to honour that, and the fact that her story and she is living on through this play is like kind of the opposite extreme of something like Ira Aldridge, who was the central character of Red Velvet, who was this big star, and big, you know, you've got the, you know, whose story has been forgotten but was very famous in his time, and then you've got this Filipino care worker who was very deeply loved in a very small community, and she's not been forgotten.
Yeah, and you chose not to have that ending in the play because you picked a particular point in time of the relationships and when they were in Israel and so on.
And also, yeah. I think sometimes to sort of we talked about it because it did feel important, you know, it's an important, I mean, we hint at it, there's a hint of her future isn't good. I mean, it's a subtle hint. If you ended the play with that, does it become too manipulative? Does it become too emotionally manipulative? And actually, it's about, the play is about finding home. It's about finding your tribe, and where home can be discovered in many, many different ways. And actually, that's kind of an uplifting message. So it's, you know, the play is doing kind of a slightly different thing.
So Paper Dolls has opened your second season.
No, it's ended my first season.
Oh, sorry, I apologize.
No, no. We've announced the extension of the title. I see, yeah.
But well, Paper Dolls has ended your first season. So what's coming up in your second season then?
In my second season, I've got a new play by Frank McGuinness called The Matchbox, which is a Liverpool Everyman and Playhouse production, which was performed there last year. And so we're bringing that to London, directed by Leah Williams, who's more well-known as an actress, but she's done this beautiful play. And then we've got a new play by Alexi K. Campbell, and we're doing that, a co-production with Shared Experience, called Bracken Moor, which is I'm not going to really reveal much about it, except say it's a bit of a ghost story. Oh. And we've got a very long title, which is called The Epic Adventure of Namo, the Manika Warrior, and His Sexy Wife, Chipo. And that's a first new play by first-time playwright called Denton Chikura.
In the Arabian Nights?
He was in Arabian Nights, yes. Yeah. And he's an actor there. But this is a Theatre for Hudsey production. And the new season is not only is it, what I love about it, it's all new plays, it's all different lenses to the world. But it's also about relationships with other organisations. So Liverpool, Shared Experience, and Theatre for Hudsey. And it's another, one of the things I talked about when I started the job is community. I talked about the Brent community, I've talked about the international community, and what's also important is the theatrical community, and to open it up and have partnerships and relationships. So I feel I'm sort of demonstrating that with the next season.
Well, actually, I was going to ask you that, in terms of the mix of the programming that you're going to have in the theatre, are you trying to have a mix of stuff that you produce in-house, as it were, as well as get work from different theatrical communities, as you've just said?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's also trying to find like-minded theatrical communities, because the Tricycle always received shows before, as well as produced its own. And so I'm trying to form sort of slightly different relationships, sort of do more co-productions. And I think actually the whole theatre industry needs to do that now because of the financial restraints that we're facing, that we actually need to find ways of working together to produce work, because we can't all afford to work. You know, I'd love in one way to do, but we wouldn't have the capacity of the organisation wouldn't be able to be constantly producing its own work. And also getting different influences. And also, so, you know, as a building, we have a responsibility to work with smaller companies.
So, I mean, now I'm just going to ask you this whole question about funding, because every time that I've come to see stuff here, you know, you are always here talking to people and networking and so on.
Yeah.
I know that there has been cuts in funding. I mean, Nick Kent resigned in protest of the initial cuts of that the Tricycle got before you moved into the new NPO status.
Yeah.
But over the course of last year and this year, there has been some cuts in that to organisations who are getting national portfolio money, like 1%. And how do you work on this, constantly trying to fundraise ends meet or whatever?
It's hard. It's really, really hard. It's I have to say, it's the thing that keeps me awake at night, and I feel very. You know, at the Evening Standard Award, Nick Heitner said in his speech, he said, "I've loved my job, and I've loved my job because it's been well funded, and I've really enjoyed it." And actually, what is sort of frustrating is that actually the subsidised work makes money in the long term. It's investment into the future. You know, if you look at what's on in the West End and how much, and you know, you look at all the Olivier nominations, and a lot of that work has come from the subsidised sector. And actually, if investment was made in the, and I understand it's not just the government, you know, it's not, I don't blame the Arts Council at all. I think they're trying to fight our corner, and I think to blame the Arts Council or look at that is the wrong, you know, is the wrong place. It's actually to really appeal to government, because, you know, it makes it just really hard to create interesting work. And I don't mean big flashy work or whatever, but what I feel I've achieved, I've done these plays that do look at different lenses to the world, that are bringing in different audiences, that have brought in new writers, I've taken huge risks, and it's going to be harder and harder to take those risks. Yet it's those risks that have generated audiences, and hopefully also, you know, younger audiences that are going to be the future audiences and future artists. And I just wish the government would invest properly in something that actually has a long-term effect and is important, because this theatre isn't just, it's not just for arty-farty people or even people who like theatre. We help, this high road needs us. Those restaurants, they love it when, you know, the advertising that goes up. We help the economy, the local economy, because people come here. I mean, you know, Anna Wintour came to see Red Velvet, and I took her across the road to the pub, the Black Lion. Mm. It got mentioned, you know, the Black Lion got reviewed in the Evening Standard magazine because Anna Wintour had been there, and it was mentioned. So, you know, it's not a self-facing, you know, we're part of a community and an economy, that local economy. And I just sometimes think the cuts are short-sighted.
But on the other hand, I mean, I was reading somewhere that the Tricycle has received some capital money have you received it, or do you need to raise?
I still need to raise money in order to get it. We've got ring-fenced just over £3 million to do a capital project of £5 million. I have to raise just over £1 million.
Okay, so if anybody rich is listening to Theatre Voice, yes, they can write you a very large check. Oh, hopefully,
my little dream. Someone just solves my problems by
keep playing the lottery. But do you want to share what are the organisational changes that you've made and the things that you're thinking about in the venue? Because apart from running the theatre, you have a cinema.
Yeah, we've got a cinema and we've got a cafe foyer. What I'm hoping with the capital project is the main areas is looking, reconfiguring and looking at the auditorium. And then also the foyer, opening up the foyer, updating the toilets. I mean, you know, there's a lot of things that haven't been changed, because the cinema was built like 12 years ago. But the main body of the building in terms of the auditorium hasn't been updated since the late 80s. And so in terms of disability access, all that needs to just be brought up to date. And central, wants a central box office, so it's not just, so the cinema and theatre, I mean, we're doing that anyway, but it's at one end, but bring it centre, we've got a Baldwin studio, make that a much more flexible second space for the creative learning programme.
So, have you made some staff changes? I was reading, I think it was in the Paper Dolls programme, that you've got two new, like you've got an executive and a finance. Is that a change from before?
Yeah, it's my structure, my management structure is changed. Before it was Nick as artistic director and a general manager as the senior management of the organisation. I've now got a triumvirate and we are an artistic director, an executive. I'm the artistic director, and I've got an executive producer, an executive director, and we're the executive team as a threesome. So it's three women at the top.
Very good. Well, I mean, that's another thing that's been mentioned in the stage and so on lately, that there are very few women in theatre. And as someone of yourself who's like from Asian background and woman and theatre at the top, wow, you know, how does that feel? And you've got two other women as part of your team.
It's, when you're doing this, I mean, it's like, it's interesting because, you know, obviously there have been a few female artistic directors and people go, oh yeah, it's time for the female artistic directors or whatever. Sometimes it's a little bit, I find it quite patronising because it's not like I've been allowed to become an artistic director. I've chosen to become an artistic director. I didn't want to be an artistic director. You know, I'd been asked to apply for the last sort of, is it last 10 years to apply for jobs and, you know, but it just, I wasn't ready or it wasn't the right timing for me. So it's not like we've been allowed at this moment. And I mean, I remember Erica Wyman getting very frustrated with the conversation, you know, recently, because she's been an artistic director for over 10 years. You know, she was at Southwark Playhouse and the Gate, then went up to Newcastle and is now deputy at the RSC. It's not like she suddenly become. I think, you know what, it's really, I've always been frightened or worried about, you know, being labelled too much as an Asian woman, because you become representative, how can you represent an Asian community or a non-white community and, you know, be everything to everyone? No one can. But I have to say, there was a really lovely moment. I was talking to the youth theatre and just talking and finding out about them, and they said they could ask questions, and, you know, they're like 15 to early 20s, and like this 18-year-old young man, I was going to say boy, but a young man sort of said to me, what's it like doing your job and not being white? And another young woman said, what did your parents think? And you realise, actually, if it just means, if by me just doing this job means that someone else thinks, oh, she's doing that, that means I can do that, then it's important. Do you know what I mean? And I sort of realised in that conversation with the youth theatre how important it is to have role models, or just know that there are people that maybe look like you that are, you know, not white middle class male, you know, for example, that can still do those jobs. And that's when it becomes, that's when you realise it matters to someone. Yeah.
So, I mean, you said that you're now enjoying being an artistic director.
Did I? Well, I may have had a drink or two when I said that.
Well, you know, I read somewhere where you said that because you've been a freelance director, yes, you've done shows at the Court and at the Almeida and also here at Tricycle, and you said, like, being a freelance director was like having a string of affairs, and being an artistic director was like being married. So,
oh my God!
Yes, one should be careful.
One should be careful what one says, because it comes back and bites you in the back.
No, I was just going to ask you, I mean, what is your typical day like? You know, like,
oh God, oh, it's,
I mean, we're sitting here in your office, and you can see all those rooftops outside and a clear sky today. But you know, what's it like every day?
Every day is, you know, I can say, it's so funny, I can say one day I enjoyed the job and then literally 2 hours later I could be tearing my hair out. It changes in a dime. I'm in meetings either with the staff discussing like immediate crisis, or we're discussing the future, or I'm having meetings outside with other, you know, other practitioners or funders or arts council or local council. I'm having to, there's no typical day. There is absolutely no typical day. It's like trying to organise my diary, trying to find systems to operate efficiently, you know, working out how to, you know, I could go, you know, health and safety, you know, are we...
So have you had to just learn this as you've got involved in the venue?
Yeah, I didn't know any of this stuff beforehand. It's really interesting how quickly... I feel like I've really been stretched and trying to grow and learn, and also having to think on my feet and apply a lot of common sense, you know, or get advice, or, you know.
Do you have like a mentor that you...
Yeah, might... I mean, you know what, I have to say what's been lovely is that a number of artistic directors have been hugely supportive and generous and kind with both their time and support and resources. It's been really lovely. I've felt very welcomed and looked after.
And you don't have time for a social life, or do you manage
well,
to
you
get
say, you, well, you've seen me.
Well, I've seen you here constantly. Yeah. I mean, I think it's great, you know, but it must be very tough in
tough.
Terms
it
of
is
your
tough.
Body, as it were, like, physically demanding.
It is, and I've got to work, you know, That's the. I mean, everyone said to me the first year is going to be the toughest. You know, that's the one thing. And as I'm coming up to my first year, I really hope it gets easier, because I don't think I can keep going like this without burning out in some degree. And also what I have to do is find a way of managing. You know, put making sure that I do, you know, eat healthily and exercise and all the rest of it, because everything's gone to pot. As they say.
Well, yes, indeed, you need a personal trainer out here.
Yeah,
a lovely space out there, actually. Nice little rooftop area.
Yeah, it'd be nice when it's warm, if it's ever going to be warm.
Well, soon. Can we just ask you to give us a glimpse of your autumn season, if you know a little bit about it? I mean, it's Red Velvet. Are we going to see that again?
I can't really talk. You know, Simon, you're being naughty, because
I can't
talk about my autumn season. We're really hoping that there'll be a future for Red Velvet. And as soon as I know, I will tell you.
Okay. Indu Rubisingham, thank you very much for talking to Theatre Voice.
Thank you, Simon.